It is the morning show. I'm Kate Archer Kent. We discuss nicotine addiction and tobacco treatment here in Wisconsin. The state health department claims the tobacco industry is rapidly developing new products and tactics, and there's legislation afoot to expand cigar bars here. Be part of the conversation. Call in with a question. You can share your views at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Danielle McCarthy is a clinical psychologist and a research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Danielle, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Good morning. And we have Lorraine Lathan with us, director of the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. Lorraine, welcome.
Thank you.
Lorraine, let's start. Yes. Mm-hmm. Let's start with you. There is this bill in the state legislature that would allow more bars to permit the smoking of cigars and pipe tobacco indoors. What do you make of this proposal?
Well, I'm really saddened and surprised that it has come up. Wisconsin has been a leader in producing and protecting all of our citizens from the hazards of secondhand smoke in the workplace and in public places. And so allowing an exemption for tobacco bars seriously undermines the law. And most importantly, it forces workers to choose between their health and paychecks.
Danielle, Wisconsin has been essentially smoke-free indoors for over a decade. How is the ban on indoor smoking affecting public health?
Well, it is improving public health in immediate and significant ways. We see that respiratory infections and other symptoms of smoke exposure decrease immediately for people who work in environments that go smoke-free. We see that patrons actually experience improvements too in venues that go smoke-free as well. We can see decreases in emergency room visits for cardiovascular events. And long-term, we see decreases in lung cancer incidents when comprehensive indoor clean air laws go into effect. So we see both short-term and long-term improvements as a result of these actions.
You know, this bill would allow bars to sell cigars and pipe tobacco for smoking at the location. Is there a health difference between cigars and pipe tobacco versus cigarettes?
Well, cigarettes are the leading cause of tobacco-related illness and death, and people do sometimes use cigars differently. Sometimes they don't fully inhale the smoke. They're not typically used quite as often as someone who might smoke a half a pack or a pack of cigarettes a day. That's 10 to 20 cigarettes a day. You don't typically see people using cigars in that kind of intensity. However, there's a real slippery slope here because there are these little cigars called cigarillos that many people do smoke as in the same way that they smoke cigarettes, and they would be included in this legislation.
Lorraine, cigar bars do exist in our state on a limited basis. Do the limited options for indoor smoking go far enough to protect against secondhand smoke?
No, I don't believe so at all. And I guess my concern is for, you know, that the tobacco age is now 21, but we still have young people, underage minors, that are able to access tobacco products. So I'm concerned about this particular bill and the impact that it would have on minors.
How dangerous is secondhand smoke?
Secondhand smoke is very dangerous, just as dangerous as smoking. We know that mothers, pregnant women that are exposed to secondhand smoke, that it has an impact on the birth of their child in terms of whether or not it will be born too soon, premature, or a small birth weight.
Danielle, stepping back for a moment, cigarette smoking has been in decline in recent decades. What can you point to for that? What is causing that?
Well, I think there are multiple factors at play here. I do think policy has made a big difference. I think seeing indoor air laws does encourage people to quit smoking. We actually have been able to see that as we evaluate the impacts of clean door air implementation. We see that smoking cessation increases. We also see that tax increases on cigarettes do drive cessation. And there has just been a decline in youth uptake of combustible cigarettes, which is a big contributor to that change. At the same time, there are still millions of people who continue to smoke regularly and want to quit. And so we're not all the way there yet. We are increasingly seeing that smoking is concentrated in and marketed to primarily disadvantaged populations as well. So continuing tobacco use is also a driver of health inequities.
We're talking about smoking prevention and policy efforts. Danielle McCarthy, clinical psychologist and research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Lorraine Lathan is here, director of the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. You can join in the conversation. Call in with a question. You can share your thoughts at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Lorraine, specifically among the African American community, Black Wisconsinites, how do you see the effects of tobacco use and nicotine and how it is marketed?
Unfortunately, the tobacco industry has been marketing the Black community for decades, and we're seeing the impact of that. We know that African Americans smoke menthol cigarettes. About 90% of African Americans who smoke in Wisconsin smoke menthols, and menthols are easier to start and more difficult to quit, and that's because it has a soothing, cooling effect on the throat, and also that there's more nicotine levels are higher in the menthols, and that makes it more addictive and more difficult to quit. So nationwide, 45,000 African Americans die each year of tobacco-related illnesses, and we're seeing that here in our state as well.
There is efforts by the Biden administration, Lorraine, to have a ban on the sale of menthol cigarettes. What effect could a menthol ban have on the smoking population?
Yes, the Biden administration is in its final stages of banning menthols, and they're estimating that about 600,000 lives could be saved, and 255,000 of those lives would be Black lives over the next 40 years. So we're looking forward to seeing that ban being implemented, and we're also working to dispel any misinformation. It's important for people to realize that the ban is restricting the production and the sale of menthol products. It's not something that would be criminalized if someone were to possess menthols. It's really on the manufacturing of mentholated tobacco products.
Why is menthol flavoring so attractive? What is the issue with menthol?
It's attractive. As I mentioned, it's less harsh than regular tobacco, so it makes it easier to inhale and to inhale deeper. And it's attractive because the tobacco industry has been very, very strategic in targeting Black communities. The price of menthols are cheaper, tend to be cheaper in Black communities. There's discounts for buying mentholated tobacco products. If you go into a Walgreens or a gas station, you'll see what we call power walls, where you'll see all of this advertising for mentholated tobacco products. Distributors come in and they make sure that their products are seen. They're at eye level for kids to see. There's more outdoor advertising in the Black communities, so you'll see lots of, again, advertising. If you live in an environment and you're seeing all of this advertising, and in within your family and your community, other people are smoking, it becomes a social norm. And so, again, the tobacco industry puts billions of dollars into advertising this product. Menthols are the only flavored tobacco product that are still on the market. So we're looking forward to that those being removed from the market.
As we explore tobacco research and treatments, policy on the horizon, Lorraine Lathan is with us, leads the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. Danielle McCarthy is here, research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Call in with a question. You can share comments at any point, 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's health department identifies e-cigarettes or vaping as one of the biggest threats to our state's youth. We discuss prevention, we discuss policy initiatives underway, and you can join in the discussion. Call in with a question, add your perspective, 800-642-1234, email ideas at WPR.org. Danielle McCarthy is a research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. And Lorraine Lathan is here, leads the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. Let's bring in Kirsten in Beaver Dam. Hi, Kirsten. What would you like to bring up?
Good morning. I was just hoping that we could discuss the limitations. So we'll have a cigar or pipe bar, and then we'll have a vaping bar, and then we'll have, you know, a marijuana bar, or, you know, where does that end? And are they looking at this to be one, and then there's going to be discrimination against the people who want to smoke? And then on the other end, you know, people can choose where they work, but if there's everyone doing this, if everyone decides to go ahead and open up and just say, well, you're discriminating against us, where does that end? Is that brought up in the legislature?
It seems like you're saying this is a slippery slope. I'm wondering, Kirsten, if you could share your story as a former smoker.
For sure. It took me forever and multiple tries to quit. And I kept thinking, oh, I won't get cancer. I won't do this. I won't do that. And then all of a sudden I realized it's the emphysema that is going to ultimately affect me. I could no longer sing anymore, et cetera, et cetera. And what bothers me today isn't necessarily the secondhand smoke, but the third-hand smoke, where everyone's walking around smelling like a cigarette. And these are people's choices. But yeah, the slippery slope, and it would prevent me from feeling comfortable to go to certain venues myself. And I don't necessarily have to go to those places, but if everyone starts to do it.
Mm. Kirsten, thank you so much for sharing. Danielle, what comes up for you in Kirsten's story and what she shared?
Oh, I'm so glad she shared that story. Thank you. You are not alone in many ways. You're not alone, first of all, in it taking multiple tries to get to living smoke-free. You're also not alone in being more likely to patronize venues that don't allow indoor smoking, whether it's because it would be a trigger for you and might elicit cravings to smoke and lead to relapse, or just because you don't want to come home smelling like smoke. And secondhand and thirdhand smoke are real concerns. We have really solid evidence that exposure to secondhand smoke is a threat to health in multiple ways. And you mentioned it's not just cancer, it's cardiovascular disease, pulmonary disease, exacerbations, and asthma, all sorts of conditions, including just increased susceptibility to respiratory illness as we get into flu season. So you're not alone either in saying, I would prefer to be able to go places and know that I'm not going to be inhaling other people's smoke or dealing with the consequences of their choices. And in fact, the vast majority of people in Wisconsin favor indoor air laws that keep places smoke-free, and it's sort of a triple win. It's a win for the employees whose exposure is greatly reduced to smoke. It's a win for employers because people do keep patronizing, and sometimes they're even more likely to patronize venues that have gone smoke-free. And it's a win to the patrons who, like Kirsten, would prefer not to be exposed to other people's smoke.
I wonder, Lorraine, if when you see policy that would loosen up, regulations that previously existed or unwinding of previous policy that put limits around smoking indoors, are you concerned about that?
I'm concerned, again, when you look at tobacco being the leading cause of deaths among African Americans, contributing cause in terms of cancer, stroke, and heart disease, that loosening any type of policies that would reduce exposure to secondhand smoke, it's alarming for us. It's difficult enough for us to get people who want to quit into cessation programs so that they can quit and stay quit for good.
Lorraine Lathan, director of the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. We have Danielle McCarthy with us, clinical psychologist and research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. You can call in with your questions and your perspectives, 800-642-1234. Earlier this month, the Department of Health Services took public input on how our state should spend its nearly $15 million from a settlement with vape manufacturer Juul Labs. Danielle, how could this money improve public health?
Well, I think that it's really important to understand that there's been an explosion in youth exposure to nicotine through electronic cigarettes, and that this is concerning, that this could potentially lead to many problems. It's not a good idea to inhale anything like this into your lungs. And we know that exposure to nicotine does affect developing bodies. And this is not something we want to encourage. At the same time, there was great hope. There is great hope that maybe this would be a way for people to stop using combustible tobacco, because that is the leading driver of smoking-related disease and death. And it does account for the 480,000 lives we lose in the U.S. and almost 8,000 lives we lose in Wisconsin every year. And we don't yet have a path forward, really, for that in the United States. E-cigarettes have not been evaluated as a therapy to help people stop using combustible tobacco in the United States. And in the meantime, a new generation of people have started using nicotine in very high concentrations now in ways that could and likely will adversely affect their health. And so it's really important that we strike the right balance here in trying to maximize the cessation of combustible tobacco while minimizing youth initiation of vaping. And we're not there yet.
Lorraine, I'm wondering, are e-cigarettes a way that the tobacco industry evolves, that it gets a new generation hooked on nicotine?
It has been working to do that. Basically, what we're doing with the Juul settlement dollars here in the Milwaukee area is that we're educating parents, teachers, and students about the harmful impact of e-cigarettes. But again, they've been flavored. They're easy for young people to hide. Parents don't understand or don't even realize that they're e-cigarettes and they're harmful. You talk to young people, and they don't even make the connection between e-cigarettes and tobacco. So the state has implemented a program called Tobacco is Changing, and that, again, targets parents to give them information about tobacco, including what we call other tobacco products, e-cigarettes, and we're in the schools now working to educate young people. This is harmful. We also work with our teens to do peer-to-peer education so that teens that started using tobacco, started vaping, that they share those stories. And quite often athletes, they lose their edge once they start vaping. So there's a lot of health kind of impacts around vaping. And with those dollars, we're able to get out into the community with parents and teachers and students to just raise awareness.
Lorraine Lathan there heads up the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. Danielle McCarthy is a research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. That's based at UW-Madison. Call in with a question, add comments along the way about nicotine, tobacco use, vaping. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin's Department of Health Services notes smoking is the number one preventable cause of death and disease in our country. We examine programs for quitting, the latest on vaping trends, and nationwide efforts to reduce tobacco use. You can be part of the discussion. Call in with a question. Share what's on your mind at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We have clinical psychologist Danielle McCarthy, research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. And Lorraine Lathan is here, directs the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. Danielle, vape manufacturers, they may argue their products work as an alternative for smokers on the path toward quitting. Does the research back up that claim?
The research does back up that claim in that there have been some randomized controlled trials that suggest that if you switch completely to an electronic cigarette or vaping delivery system for nicotine, that can work as well as, say, example, just using the nicotine patch. Work has not been done in the United States. It's been done in other countries, and we haven't been able to evaluate that here because right now the FDA does not allow us to test this as a therapy because no manufacturers have applied to make this a medication to help people stop smoking. So this is all based in other countries. The trick is that many people who start vaping do that in addition to using combustible tobacco, and that we believe is a net harm to health. Now you're administering nicotine in a couple different ways. You're continuing to use the more toxic combustible form of tobacco, and you may be increasing your level of tobacco dependence or your addiction to tobacco, which may make it harder to quit. So if you're going to use e-cigarettes, we encourage you to switch completely, to give up combustible tobacco completely, and to use the e-cigarettes for the purpose of quitting smoking, not to keep using nicotine in places where it's not possible or convenient to smoke regular cigarettes.
I wonder then, you know, if we see cigarette smoking in decline, is nicotine trending that way? I mean, considering the rise and availability of e-cigarettes and vaping, especially among youth.
Yeah, there have been concerning trends of increasing vaping, especially among youth. I hope that we've hit a peak and that we won't continue to climb, but it is a serious concern, and that's where we see the greatest growth. It's not in people who are quitting combustible tobacco, but in people who this is their first nicotine product that they're using.
Lorraine, this year the city of Milwaukee is implementing new zoning rules that limit expanding e-cigarette and tobacco stores. How could a change in zoning rules affect access to nicotine products?
Yes, we applaud the city for putting that ordinance in place. What it does, it prevents new license from being issued to potential retailers that are within 1,000 feet of a school, a playground, or a youth-serving organization, and those retailers that would be within 500 feet of another tobacco retailer. So that's a big win for us, and what it does, it reduces the opportunity for young people to access tobacco products.
Hmm. The research group, KFF, Lorraine, says African Americans in Wisconsin smoke at almost twice the rate of white residents. Why is there this difference? What is going on?
That's correct. Our rates are actually, we have the highest disparity in the nation in terms of tobacco use. Mm. And again, it goes back to the tactics of the tobacco industry. They have been targeting our community for decades and decades, and it's worked. And again, we know that tobacco is an addiction. Also, we know that more African Americans will attempt to quit and will not succeed. They will not be successful. And so we're really trying to hone in on what are those cessation programs that we can offer that, again, will lead to tobacco-free lifestyles for African Americans.
What do you recommend there? What nicotine replacement therapy is safe and effective?
What we're seeing is that a combination of counseling and nicotine replacement therapy, the two together, work well. Quite often that what we hear in our community is, oh, I'm just going to go cold turkey. I'm going to try to quit without any help. And that certainly is not the route to go. It's not a successful route. So we're really promote the Wisconsin Quit Line. There's a first breath program for pregnant women who want to quit during their pregnancy and stay quit. And then, of course, there's some vaping programs. There's texting programs that are out there as well. I think we've worked a lot in public housing. Freedom from Smoking is another curriculum that has been developed by the American Lung Association. It's group counseling, and so along with the therapy. And the different nicotine replacement therapies, it differs in terms of what works for individuals, so that we really encourage them to talk to their medical provider to figure out which one's going to work best for them. But we do know that you need both. You need the counseling and you need the replacement therapy.
But I wonder, is the group counseling free and accessible to everyone, to people in rural and urban areas?
That's what we're working so hard on. Again, 1-800-QUIT-NOW is free and accessible. But we do know within our community, our culture, that people like the face-to-face type of counseling. So some of that counseling and services are available through healthcare providers. We're trying to get more information out there. And in fact, with the menthol ban being anticipated, the FDA is estimating about 230,000 African Americans nationwide will want to quit within the first 13 to 17 months that the ban goes into effect. And so as a result of that, we're starting to convene cessation providers here in Milwaukee so that we can have a very coordinated approach to how do we offer these services. And I would say similarly to when HUD went smoke-free in 2018, there was this concern that people were going to be evicted because they couldn't smoke in the common areas where they lived. And so we really worked hard. We worked with the American Lung Association to make programming, cessation programming, available to public housing residents in where they live. So we brought the programs to them.
Mm.
Yeah.
Lorraine Lathan, director of the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. Danielle McCarthy is here, research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. As we look at smoking prevention and policy efforts across the state, you can join in with your questions and comments, 800-642-1234. Danielle, we heard from Larry in La Crosse, called in. Larry asks about the nicotine inhalation system, Nicotrol, and how effective it is to quit smoking compared to the use of e-cigarettes. And as an aside note, Nicotrol's maker Pfizer stopped selling the product as of September, according to a news release from Pfizer. Why was the product discontinued? What can you tell us?
So the nicotine inhaler was one of the evidence-based nicotine replacement therapies. You can replace nicotine from smoking in much safer ways by wearing a nicotine patch, using a nicotine gum or nicotine lozenge. There are prescription-only nicotine nasal sprays, and the nicotine inhaler was also prescription-only. And I think that the main reason it was discontinued is just that there was not a lot of use. It was not prescribed very frequently. It did allow people to sort of mimic the action of smoking, but it did not deliver a very high concentration of nicotine. And I think that it just didn't really hit the market in a very powerful way. And so it wasn't because it was dangerous in any way. It was just that there were other forms of nicotine replacement that people were using instead of the inhaler. But there was evidence to suggest that it was both safe and effective. So what we recommend currently is that as the first line treatment, if you're smoking regularly and you want to quit, is to combine the nicotine patch with a fast acting nicotine replacement agent, like the nicotine gum and the nicotine lozenge. And what that gets you is a slow, steady release of nicotine from the patch, and then the ability to give yourself a boost in nicotine when you're anticipating or experiencing a strong craving. And that combination nicotine replacement therapy is one of the more effective strategies that can roughly double the odds of quitting successfully, especially when combined with counseling, as Lorraine mentioned. The other first-line therapy that we recommend, which you have to get a prescription for, is varenicline, which is a non-nicotine pill that stimulates the nicotinic receptors and occupies them so that when you smoke while you're on it, you find smoking less rewarding. And so there are a couple of ways that that can help people. And again, that roughly doubles at least the odds of quitting successfully when combined with counseling. And what, I just want to go ahead.
Well, what is the recovery trajectory? How long would you be on those frontline therapies?
So we typically recommend 8 to 12 weeks, 12 weeks being the more common. We do encourage people to stick with it for those 12 weeks, even when things are going really well, because relapse risk remains high for quite some time. It does start to fall after 3 months, though. And so we encourage people to stick with the medications and to get counseling. And as Lorraine mentioned, the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line does provide free counseling in multiple forms throughout Wisconsin. All Wisconsin residents are able to use this service to get one-on-one counseling with an experienced quit coach, to enroll in a text messaging program, or to even do virtual support groups that happen online. They have a bunch of digital tools available now as well, and the Wisconsin Tobacco Quit Line will send you a starter kit of nicotine patch, gum, or lozenge, so you can try it out, all at no cost. And so we want people to know that this service is available. They also have a vaping cessation program for people who may be struggling to stop vaping and want some support in doing that.
What have you observed from the advent of virtual support groups?
So I think it's an exciting way to connect people. People often voice interest in joining support groups, but then the logistics of life kind of get in the way, right? It becomes hard to show up Tuesday night at 6 o'clock, right, to a group meeting. And I think the idea of being able to connect with peers who are going through the same thing and teach each other what works is a great idea. And if being able to do that remotely would allow more people in rural areas to participate, or people with transportation or childcare issues. I think it's fantastic.
Clinical psychologist Danielle McCarthy is a research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. Lorraine Lathan heads up the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network, and there's space to talk. Call in with a question. You can add your views. The number is 800-642-1234. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. It is The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Smokers can and do quit smoking for good. The Centers for Disease Control and Prevention likens quitting to a marathon, not a sprint. Call in to ask a question. Share what's on your mind. The number is 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. Danielle McCarthy is a research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention. And Lorraine Lathan directs the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. Lorraine, you mentioned cold turkey and just stopping smoking, as they say, all with willpower. What is the potential for success or failure from that perspective?
I think Danielle might actually have the percentages. I can just share with you that we encourage people. We hear cold turkey and we hear prayer and just praying. And we encourage, again, our participants, again, to enter into a program. Yes, continue to pray, but also group counseling and some type of quit aid is what we recommend. But I think, Danielle, she might have the percentages. It's very low, but she might have the actual percentages.
Danielle, stopping without other support, what do you find?
Right. So the quit rate for a single quit attempt at the population level is somewhere between 5% and 7% of people will succeed in staying quit. And medications and counseling, the combination will increase that. Now, at the same time, right, that's kind of discouraging that only 5 to 7 out of 100 people who try to quit will stay quit for 6 months. If we look at the whole trajectory of a person's career in quitting smoking, we know that more than half the people who've ever smoked have succeeded in quitting. You can quit. It just takes trying lots of things and trying many times. And each try counts. Each attempt can teach you something about what you need to change, what you need to try, what your triggers are, and how to deal with them. And believing that you can do it is one of the biggest obstacles, I think, that people experience. And hoping that sort of it will go away on its own, that doesn't work. And so we encourage people to try lots of things, see what fits for them, and build on their past success. Even if you only quit for a day, that's a beginning.
Lorraine, how can people best support friends and family members who are attempting to quit?
I think the best thing they can do is not to judge them and to, again, as Danielle said, every attempt counts. It matters. And so if there's relapse, people can encourage them to try again. Well, that didn't work, so let's try this particular method. Another way that family and friends can support someone who's trying to quit is to make sure that they help that person understand what are the triggers for them smoking and to help them to avoid those triggers. Quite often we know that stress, just kind of all of the stress related to job, family, kids, that smoking allows for some type of relief. So what are some substitute activities that can be offered for someone who's trying to quit? Going for a walk, spending time with family, and just avoiding the triggers is a big battle or a challenge for people who are trying to quit. So, again, I would encourage someone, if you have a loved one who's trying to quit, help them. Help you yourself should understand what their triggers are and then help them to avoid those triggers.
Danielle, what is your message for family and friends?
So think of this as your loved one having COVID or the flu for several weeks, right? Be patient with them. They're going to go through withdrawal, and that withdrawal may come out as irritability, sadness, anxiety. It may be unpleasant for a little while, but if you give them your support, if you let them know you believe they can do it and you support them in making this change in their for their health and the health of the people that love them, then you know they have a better chance of doing that. We do know that social support does predict success in quitting. And so be loving, be supportive, and be patient.
But I want to pick up on that word social, because there is a social habit to smoking and tobacco use as well. Perhaps, you know, one you do with friends or step outside and have a cigarette together. How do you replace that social aspect of it?
Right. I think that it is important that people not give up the things that smoking has been giving them. They just find other ways to get that. So you also miss out on a lot socially when you're the only one in your group who's going out for a smoke break every 30 minutes. And so you can find ways to find new social rewards and opportunities that you've previously missed because you're investing not in smoking, but in other relationships and connections. And most people are able to identify people in their lives who will celebrate that they're trying to quit smoking and be proud and happy for them. And so those are the people you want to spend a little more time with.
Lorraine, looking at the state of Wisconsin, your organization promoting the Wisconsin Healthiest State Initiative, where are we now as a state on the path to becoming healthier?
I think, again, the fact that we're smoking less, that the tobacco adult smoking rate has certainly declined, that's putting us closer to the path of being one of the healthier states or healthiest states in the United States. I think that the problem lies in the disparities, that the successes that we're achieving in improving health outcomes, they're not equally achieved by all, across all populations. So that's where we really have to focus on the disparities that exist.
Yes, yes. Well, Danielle and Lorraine, thank you so much for joining us. We appreciate it.
Thank you
for having us.
Danielle McCarthy is a clinical psychologist and research director at the UW Center for Tobacco Research and Intervention that is based at UW-Madison. Lorraine Lathan is director of the Wisconsin African American Tobacco Prevention Network. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.